ons het natuurlijk voor Calvin Gilfallon in die atelier. Calvin, sê vir ons, hoekom hierdie een van die liedjes was wat jy vir ons gestuur het om te speel?
Baie dankie, Anisha. Die liedje laat my, is baie nostalgische liedje. Ek het hom vir die eerste keer gehoor vroeg aan, terwijl ons in Liede Verster in 1988 in gevangenis aangehou was. Die aanbieder was, sy naam was The Little Red, hy het vir Good Hope FM gewerk.
Yes.
En hy het geweet dat die brothers in arms beteken moos, ons het broers en sisters, maar brothers in arms beteken comrades.
Baie keer sê
ons vir mekaar comrade, maar mense weet jy, het is eindelijk iemand wat jy meer as jou broer vertrouw.
Yes.
So hy sing oor oorlog, en ek denk vandag aan Gaza, ek denk vandag aan Iran, ek denk aan al die plekke waar daar conflict is,
yes.
En hoe die lied, waar comrades mekaar moet dra, die liedjie. En natuurlijk maak Knopfler die gitaarspeler is een van die beste gitaarspelers in die wereld.
Die mooiste
gitaars wat hy is. En sy pa was een socialist van die Oostblok, en hy het Londen toe getrek. En meeste van sy songs aan met Dire Straits is liedjies wat bewustzijn, wat mense bewust maak van die onrechtvaardigheid wat rondom hulle gaan. Soms baie speciaal, my kinders weet, as ek in hy space is, waar ek denk is nou te veel, daar is te veel onrechtvaardigheid in die wereld, daar gaan te veel verkeerd in ons eie land, met my eie kamerade, dan sit ek in een kant, en daar speel ek die en nog ander goed ook, katharsis, is een katharsis, want jy weet, jy connect het ook aan een gebeurtenis.
Ja.
En die ding, ek denk hulle het vir die eerste keer release op die Wembley concert, die Artists Against Apartheid, waar hulle gesing het vir Mandela's, denk 70ste verjaardag of 72ste verjaardag, in Wembley het klomp sangers by mekaar gekom, en hulle die lied gespeel, as een van hulle bijdraas tot die Artists Against Apartheid, wat vir die vrylating van Mandela vir hulle geveg het, ja.
Vlodwan, so sy is natuurlijk iemand wat ek ken wat op die SGB is van Klein Heerburg.
Okay.
Sy sê, is een interessante muziekkeuse. As hulle, omdat sy van my ken, toe dink sy seker nou weer ek speel die liedjie.
Okay.
Maar Vlodwan, ons het vir Calvin in die atelier vandag. Nou, Calvin, you said we can switch between English and Afrikaans,
perfect.
You know, wide variety. So, before we go into a little bit more of the... You know, we are in Human Rights Month. That is what I want to focus on a little bit later. But first, tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up? Because obviously, we need to start somewhere.
Yeah. I'm a child of the 60s. So I was born in 1962. In fact, was that the year when Mandela went to prison for the first time, I think, no? And in the dusty street of Paul East, Gilfellan Street, close to the old police station.
You got your surname.
I don't know how it comes. I haven't had the time to investigate that.
Yeah.
But it was quite traumatic. The one moment we could play in, what is today, Amstelhof, we could go in, we chased the rabbits, we chased the birds in the farm called Amstelhof.
Yeah.
And then one day, I was about 3-4 years old, suddenly the bulldozers came in.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to flatten the land, the bushes where we played. And then we knew there was something happening. And that was the time of forced removals, where colored and black people, or so-called colored and African people, were removed from White Pearl, from that side of the river, and moved into Amstelhof and other places also, New Orleans. The so-called African people, Xhosa-speaking people, were moved to Langabuya, out of which group, Mbekweni Township, of course. So that was my, it was traumatic, interesting, but I would say my foundation was laid there. My late father, Anthony Gilfallon, was a migrant worker in Namibia, and my mother, Patricia, would look after us, and we were a big family. When I was born, we were already, you know, it was myself and my sister. And then like every second year or so, until we were up to 8 children were born in Gilfallon Street. And a big, you know, a happy family, but also of fights and our whatever. And the wonderful thing is we stayed with our grandparents. So there were like three generations in one house.
Wow.
Us, the kids, then our mothers, father and uncles. And then the two old people. So you could speak over decades of experiences in one household. And when I started my professional career, I often jumped into that era because it gave you the tools to deal with teamwork and all these names that people call, you know, focus and teamwork and all these words that the MBA students come up every year.
But they all lead up to the same thing.
Yeah.
Now, you told me now but more of the environment that you grew up in. It obviously shaped you as a person, but who was one of your biggest influences? When you were younger, just before high school, or in high school, who were those influences?
Besides my parents?
Yes, besides your parents.
It was a woman called Liz Abrams.
Okay.
Who later became my political mentor and who shaped my being, my attitude towards life, towards other people, towards, in terms of feelings towards other people, humanity. It was wonderful. She was almost my mother outside of my mother. Now, we heard of her a lot in the 70s and the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a trade union worker, a feisty woman, a strong woman, and one of my heroes. Then as I went to high school, you know, primary school is nice.
Yeah.
Primary school
fun
is fun times, it's liquor, but in high school it's where life begins. Then you start to distinguish between who's genuine, who both in terms of your peers and in terms of other people and in terms of your teachers.
Yes.
So you immediately and I want to speak to teachers because I'm also a teacher.
Yeah.
The things that you say to young people when they're 13, 14 will forever be etched in their memory. So we must be very careful how we speak to people, not speaking down to the students, not speaking ill of the student, not wrongly accusing people. And I think that's when you start to say, okay, Mr. Fredericks, I like you because those values that I grew up with, you there's a match between you and us.
Yes.
And then my geography teacher, Mrs. Williams, a big, bulky woman, those are the two, bigger people besides my family and Liz Abrams, who kind of influenced me and who I aspire to. And they were not, it's not like they're not professors and doctors and lawyers.
People.
They're ordinary people, but they carry the values where you don't need a skill to a wonderful degree or skill for you to feel that you want to be part. That's likewise, one of our former counselors here, Chrissy Brunk, when I was at school, high school, in my second year in high school, she was our student leader.
Okay.
A short, small little woman. And we were all admiring her and how the police would pick her up and transport her to the police cells, etc.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a very turbulent, the 60s and the 70s and 80s were very turbulent, but they were very exciting times because, if you look at the Stupa now, there were all of these nightclubs there.
Yeah.
If you look at where the police station was, people would gather there at Mochi's place there around Aesop's at that corner, restaurant and Zubi's and whatever. It was just amazing how the community gathered around those places because apartheid never created deliberate spaces for recreation for them.
Yeah.
If you're at school, you leave, you have a hall or a rugby field.
Mm-hmm.
But in Paul East, when we were growing up, there were very little or no facilities.
And they created themselves at the end of the day.
That's the point that I want to make, sorry.
No, it's okay. Blodwan Itwea Botska, she said she grew up in Victor Verster. And that song that we played earlier, Brothers in Arms, she said it speaks wide and deep.
Oh, wonderful. How old is she? Is he young? How old is
she? She must say if she wants to disclaim that information. but yes, she can't wait. She says she can't wait to hear the rest of your playlist. But Vladwin, you don't have to wait too long. We have the next one coming up. I'll see if I'm not butchering this name now. It says Aluta Continua.
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I saying it correctly? Yeah.
Aluta Continua is Marie Makeba.
Yes.
The wonderful Marie Makeba, one of South Africa's greatest exports.
Yes.
With Yuma Sekela, Letambule. Oh, they were so wonderful.
There's a lot.
That music, because the music was also born out of struggle.
Yes.
Abdullah Ibrahim, by the way, he's coming to the Jazz Festival.
Ooh.
Oh, those 50s, 40s, 50s, 60 musicians.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing. And she's one of them.
So let's take a listen to her. Here's A Luta Continua.
A Luta Continua means the struggle continues. The struggle against poverty, against inequality, against racism, against injustice.
My people, open your eyes. Maputo, Maputo, home of the brave, our nation will soon be as one. Frelimo, Frelimo, Samora Machel, Samora Machel has won.
Was natuurlijk gewees, a luta continue. Ek is omdat ek nou die liedjie geluister het, nou weet ek hoe om te sê.
Nice man.
Ons is natuurlik vir Calvin in die atelier vandag, hier so tydens ons mense. Nou, Wendy Marshegi, appa, my opa, sal die liedjie nou baie klip afgesil. Okay. Dat is dalk waar ek het gehoor het. Ek het nog nie.
Ek dink dat is dalk waar ek het gehoor het. Absoluut.
Daar in my opa se huis. Nou, ons het nog net van jou skooldag gepraat. Maar dat is nog een vraag over school daar wat ik jou wil vragen. Was daar enige lessen tijdens jouw school daar, wat je geleerd hebt of wat je net achtergekomen hebt, wat je nou nog in jouw beroep samen met jou draagt?
Absoluut, beslis. Een van die, omdat ik vroeg school toe was, ik heb bij Amstelhof school gegaan.
Ik wil gevraagd wat de school in was jij?
Ik heb nog eens Amstelhof, Paulus hoor en toe, okay. Evika toe en toe in mijn beroep in. Omdat ik baie vroeg school toe gegaan het, 4,5 jaar, het ek geleer om afhankelijk van ander mense te wees en om terug te geven aan de mense. Want as jy 4,5 is, dan het jy iemand nodig om naar jou te kyk.
Yes.
Want jou sister, ouwer is jy, en jou niggies en neefies, gaan nie doen, hulle moes nie niks van jou op weet
nie.
Jy kan nie hulle baba, hoe kom stuur hulle baba school toe? en dit geleer, daar was een meisje in my klas in sub A. Haar naam is Marta, ek wens, ek kan haar kry. Sy was ek so 13 jaar oud, een jong opgeskote. Die kan moes 20 ook op die school nog wees in 13 en 14.
Ja, nou nie meer.
Nou nie meer, ja. En sy het na my gekyk asof sy, niemand het van gesê sy na my kyk, maar sy het na my gekyk in my jaar. En die, hoe jy aanpassings moet maak om oor te oorleef.
Yes.
As jy sien, as jy nou, as jy nie daar is, en jy loop nou in een klompie polies vast, dan weet jy wat om te maak. Jy moet of wegstap, of hulle sê, kijk, vat my brood voor het. Laarschool het my die tactiek geleer. Hoërskool het my weer politisch skep gemaakt. Geleer om te kyk naar die onregverdighede. Toe ek sal het 6 kom, moes ons die oude Suid-Afrikaanse landvlag op Republiekdag ophang, en dan moet ons sing onder die stem, maar nie die stem nie, moes ons het sing, teen ons wil. Toe by sal het 7 kom, toe begin ons al kritisch te raak al. Besef ons maar, allemaal die symbole van onderdrukking, gaan ons nie ondersteun nie, en ons het begin, so van sal het 7, 8, 9, 10, het ek geleer om die, nie net die school onregverdigheid binnen die school, maar het my geleer om onregverdigheid as een beginsel te verwerp en te beveg. En daar word gaan ons praat wanneer ek na my universiteit jare
en my
goed kom, ja.
Ons gaan actually nou daarin, maar Wendy Marsh die op boodskap gestuur, sy is ook van die Amstelhof af, soos ek gesê het, daar school gegaan, sy sê, hulle was net 5 in SAP A, en sy was daar in 1985.
1985?
Yes.
Toen begin ek te werk op universiteit.
Ja. Ja, dit is 85, was ek nog eens een gedachte nie. Maar, ja, laat ons wat teruggaan, maar was. Sorry, alles kom
spul hier so
op die liggie. Maar soos ek nog gesê het, we are going into your university, which is a little bit more prominent than, I would say, than your primary school years.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Like you said, in high school, it kind of started for you, where you noticed the discrimination. And I think in everyone's high school years, you start to realize, okay, this is how the world actually is. But you haven't experienced it as soon as you step into university. You said you went to, is it UWC?
UWC, University of the Western Cape. So let me go one step back. So in 1979, I matriculated. And then I applied, because in my heart, my mind, and my body, I still want to be a veterinary.
Okay.
Vier arts, ne?
Yes.
So I applied. The only university that was offering it at that point in time, and I think still, is the University of Pretoria.
Okay.
But at Stellenbosch, there was a veterinary assistant. There was something in that line.
Yeah.
So I applied because our teachers at that time, I mean, voorlichting was not, what do you call it, voorlichting, whatever, career education, whatever, training, that was your off period.
Okay.
I mean, that
it's
was
like
our off period.
Now.
so So we didn't know that there are certain prescripts, but the biggest thing that I didn't know is that you have to write to a minister, a white minister, to ask him if you can study there. My father said, oh, not a damn. So I stayed at home for a whole year, and I worked with my hands on my father's building contract.
Mm.
For a year, I hard work, cement, bricks, whatever. And if you ask me, in my primary school, what are the skills and stuff that you learn to survive, high school, your political consciousness, if anything prepared me for the real world in terms of a metaphor, the whole idea of building, not physical building, but metaphysically building, psychologically, religious, everything building was in that year. And it was a year of severe school boycotts. It was 1980. One of the worst school years. Some people didn't write exams, etc. People think it's 85, 89. By that time, it was already
ongoing.
But really, 80. So a lot of community protest meetings and school students in the community hall. Community hall.
Yeah.
So I would work during the day. I would be tired, but I would still attend some of those.
Yes.
And then the next year, I decided I want to go to UWC because that's where the action is happening. So 81, I started there. I finished my first degree in 83. Then I studied further honors degree in 84. That was my baby sister was also born in. My lad Lamiki was also born in
84.
In 84, in that year, and then in 85 was the year that changed my whole life. So if you are at university, you get bursary. The only way that my parents could afford, and that it was under the Department of Colored Affairs was allocating the bursary. Then you have to work. You either have to teach or to do some. You have to work off the years that you got the bursary. You can, or you must give the money back. So I can't get the give the money back. So I then after honors I started with higher education diploma.
Yes.
You go a week into university, and the second 2 weeks, you go for practice teaching.
Okay.
And so I went for practice teaching for 2 weeks, February 1985.
Mm-hmm.
Then on Monday, I got back into the class, big class. And then this Professor Owen, quite a progressive professor, says, is there Calvin Gilfillan in this hall? Is there something wrong with my marks? You have to immediately go and see Professor Ruiz in the geography department where I studied.
Yes, yes.
And so they discuss with me and they say, Professor or Dr. Colin Keane from Australia, the part-time lecturer, is pregnant. She can't come for part-time lectures at UWC in the geography department. Am I prepared to take it? So I'm sitting. Went back to my father. I said, my father, this is now the opportunity of a lifetime. You go straight from class into
giving the class.
He said, of course, as long as you do your master's degree and you do your thing, and that was it. So that year, probably that month, February month, changed my entire life for the better.
Wow.
And it's so fortunate. I'm thinking, if it was a year to this side, or a year to the other side, left or right, I would not have been where I was. So that was really. And when we talk about my career later on, I will tell you.
I just have one thing. So when it comes to the university, it's obviously mind-blowing for me because I didn't grow up in apartheid, right? I came way after that. Apartheid was over.
That's why we must talk about it.
Yes, so that we are also informed and learn from it. Because now, I don't want to say, it's also still not easy for us to get into certain universities because they still check the color you are, where you're from. Obviously, some, how can I say, races have privilege now to get into university. And Wendy Marsh also says here, this to me is very mind-blowing, that you first had to do orientation because you weren't smart enough. Yes, they still do orientation, but if they do orientation, you're already in. But I think that's, but it just shows how different life is, or life was, or and how it is now, especially in South Africa. Because now, yes, we still have to write all those tests, your pre-tests before you get into university. But now you can apply anyway.
Yeah.
That time you guys couldn't apply.
And when you talk about human rights, I want to talk about that, because so often, you know, I'm in my position, I know they come and lament and say, you know, what did we fight for? Why did you go to jail for? And I say there are things that we must acknowledge we've achieved as a democracy. And we must better that. And a couple of things like gender-based violence, like the crime that we have in our country, the xenophobic attacks, the fact that we don't have water always in the northern provinces, those things we must address. But latrines that we still have in some of the schools.
Yes.
But we can't only talk about that. We must also talk about the fact that you can apply now. You don't have to write to a minister.
Yeah.
To go to a white university.
Exactly. No more writing to ministers. I'm so glad about that. But obviously, you sent us all your favorite, not favorite, or even songs that you remember.
The songs are markers of times in my life.
Yes.
Difficult times, hardships, struggle times, good times, all of them. Yeah.
Yes.
Obviously, you can't, in one interview like this, you can't play
all your 100. Anything.
It's not 100.
You can't play all 200 playlists of that. But the next song we are going to listen to, you know, guys, and I must tell you, there's a few songs that I've liked, especially the one that I played before this, Aluta Continua. I'm going to add that to my playlist. But here is Biko, and this is the 2002 remastered version. Yes, dit is Biko hierso op KC107.7 as jy nou net ingeskakel het. Jy luister nou weer maandag aand saam met my Anisha Marsh elke maandag aand van 6 tot 9. Ons is nog steeds besig met ons segment van ons mense. Ons is natuurlik vir Calvin Gilfallon in die atelier en die musiek wat jy luister is sy musiekkeuses vir die aand. Nou, Calvin, soos ek weer gesê het, na elke liedjie gaan ek wil weet hoekom jy die liedjie gekies het.
Offline, het heeft me gezegd, geef me eens waar je liedje gehoord hebt.
Yes, laat ik eerst even jou zeggen.
Oké, zeg eens voor mij, dan zal
ik. Ik was in graad 8.
Zijn dat 6, oké?
Yes. Ik denk, was het eerste of tweede keer wat ik geschiedenis gekregen op een hoërskool. My graad 8 en begin graad 9 jaar was ek by school wat predominantly white.
Okay.
So, because we lived in Brackenfell at the time. And most of the kids, obviously, white, because I was in Afrikaans class as well. So, even more white than what you would usually see. But our history teacher, he was colored. And I was like, okay, this is my first time having a colored teacher since we lived in Brackenfell. So, I was like, okay, this is probably going to be a nice and interesting class for me. Yeah. Our second history class, he played this song. And I was like, because we were about to kind of just have a refresher of grade 8 and what happened in apartheid and everything. Yeah. And then he explained to us, but this is what happened on Youth Day. This is why we celebrated. Yeah. You guys must listen to this song. And I was like, why has no one ever told me? Obviously, I knew of apartheid. Everyone knows about it. Yeah. But I didn't know there was like music connected
absolutely.
To that time. Yeah, so absolutely. It was so amazing to kind of just hear that. And have someone I could, at the end of the day, learn from.
Yeah.
So that's where
wonderful
I heard.
Wonderful year. No, you see, that song that's for what the I first like, time. The intergenerational conversation, because for me that's missing. But let me come to the song. This year we commemorate 50 years of the Soweto Uprising.
Yes.
And Steve Biko and his Black Consciousness Movement was at the forefront of that. Mm. Many people think that the ANC was in 76 was leading that student revolt and whatever. Yeah. I mean, the ANC was involved, but it was predominantly the Black Consciousness Movement and the student movement, the Azanian Students Organization, was at the forefront of this. So, although this song was written years after that. This was also playing at Wembley when they sang Mandela. I think it's a 72nd birthday.
I think it was a 72nd
birthday at Wembley, and we were in jail and the other people in the concert. And at the end of the day, that year, Mandela was moved from Portsmouth to Victor Verster.
Yes.
So it's so clear in me. So it's so important because we're talking about human rights and we talk about abuse. Mm-hmm. We talk about violence against women and children, but the violence against big people during apartheid was absolutely horrific. And Biko was one of those things. He died in the apartheid jail. The official record was that he hurt himself. But the real reason was that he was assaulted by the police and he died in detention. Mm-hmm. And so when we commemorate this 50 years of the Soweto Uprising and the 30 years of our Bill of Rights and our Constitution, the two are interlinked. Mm. We don't want that anymore. And come to my work at the castle now also.
Yes.
We have an outdoor installation. The oldest bastion of the castle is called the Leerdam.
Okay.
And at the bottom of the Leerdam, there's an open field. And just at the outside of that open field, the original gallows and stakes where people were hanged and where they died, was that spot. So we chose that spot to make 118 open graves. And Biko's grave is one of them, Imam Harun, Matthew Goniwe, Fort Galata, all the people who mysteriously died in apartheid, there's an open grave for them.
Yeah.
So their stories came out in the TRC with the titulate, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Yes. But the courts never found the people guilty. Now, there's a couple of cases. Most of those cases are open now.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as, if all of those cases are closed, then we will close every grave. As a symbolic, gesture. And also to close the chapter for the people who died on the gallows of the castle 350 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's the significance of that. Okay. So I always link my work with social activism, with reality on the ground, so that people can see. But what I loved when you talked to me about that because your reality is totally different from my reality.
Yes.
Because I had to make a choice here between two songs. This song, where people maybe will relate better to, or Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall, which is also the song of that time.
Yes.
That was our song in 76.
Okay.
That was our song by Pink Floyd that did it. But I wanted this one so that people hear the name of Biko, because we know Sisulu, Mandela, Tutu.
Yes.
But we often don't hear Sobukwe and Biko. And they all played a significant role in creating this conditions for better human rights that we have today. The fact that you could go to a school completely white and have a colored teacher teaching you. That, I mean, it
and
was
that
unthinkable.
Was my first experience.
I could never think of that. For me, in my your age upbringing, it's like
especially that side of the world.
Absolutely.
So, he doesn't work there anymore, though. He's at the University of Stellenbosch.
Okay,
now.
He's lecturing there. Okay.
He was a lecturer before he started school. He was there for 2 to 3 years. And then
so he played the song while he's teaching you about that history. Wonderful.
But back to your work. You obviously work at the Castle of Good Hope.
No.
Right? You work
but
at
it was
now.
A long trip before I landed here.
Yes. But I want to talk about your work now, because you're still doing it. It's active daily in your life.
Yeah.
Personally to you, what does it mean to work at such a heritage site?
An historic place. Yeah. And I think in a sense, if you listen to what I've earlier said, you would understand why it's such, it's like almost it's a calling. It's not a work. You say, well, you're working there.
Yeah,
I'm not working there.
It's just
like amazing. And it's my 13th year there, and everything there's a different angle. Mm-hmm. So what I could do, I could take the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and see, okay, what are the big issues? The issue of the land. So come to the castle and have a discussion about the land there. Because it's highly likely that the earliest laws about land disposition was written in the castle. So we have it there. So, or you talk about gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. Then I say, but Kretua, the young woman who was in Van Riebeeck's household, was abused as a woman. So when you talk about human abuse and femicide, let's have the workshops there in the space where Kretua's body was laid to rest for the last time. If we talk about cultural, the Bill of Rights talk about the freedom of expression, of culture, you know, in that. So if I think of Kumalikis and Klopsa music and Malay music that was never allowed in the castle, we have those kind of things there, and concerts. It's just a mingle moose of things, but with a very clear purpose is to let people talk, let people converse, let people learn, let people, and sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes when I have koi people there and they confront other people, it's sometimes violent. Not like they almost fight with each other because they will say to the tourists, "What are you doing here? Your government took our land away. Now you're coming here as tourists." But for me, that mediating, the fact that I can bring the two parties together, that we can listen to all those differences, and I don't say we can resolve all of them, because a landless person, if I can't give that person land, how do I resolve that issue?
And some of the things are, it's carried on from from what they, like for example, now if my mother obviously experienced apartheid. I didn't. Where what she, some parents, they obviously carry that on to their children.
Yeah.
But my parents are a bit more open. They allowed us to be in predominantly white schools so that we can learn from them, and they then at the end of the day learn from us. But I know you have a whole long journey, but we do have a time.
I know.
Time.
If you invite me, you must break it up in Mondays.
And one thing I must tell you, I didn't tell you this, I've never in my life been to the Castle of Kuro.
You have an open invitation now.
thank you.
You must bring the whole KC team there.
I think a few of them have.
They have been there. They had a live broadcast there a couple of years ago.
Oh,
Youth Month, I think.
Youth Month. Oh. I've never been there. But I the way you've been speaking about not just your job now, more of the history, I haven't really realized, especially now in our culture as colored people, how important, like, the Castle of Good Hope, number one, because that's where Kirtua was laid to rest. And as you were speaking now, what happened to her during her time is also very important in what we as a woman can also learn from that. So, people, if you do have the time, like, I will make the time to also come and go there. And now, how do you think, I think you said it, how does the castle contribute to human rights and South Africa's sports?
First of all, to acknowledge that the castle was a hot bed of oppression, of racism, of slavery. You must first acknowledge your, because you can't have redemption without acknowledging that. So for me, at the beginning when I started, it was important to lay open the history, almost to cut it open and say, like, this is the history, good, bad, ugly, whatever. Like, it is there now. We always keep it in the back of our mind, but we also have a present and a future that we must dealing with.
Yeah.
You can't be imprisoned in the past forever. Mm. The past offers you the tools, the understanding, the conceptual clarity, the moral clarity, but it can't be your prison.
Yeah.
You have to say, okay, like I said, I was in prison and I came out of prison and I achieved all of these other things that I not even have spoken about. So it's important that we use the lessons of the castle for today in terms of abuse. I mean, our biggest human rights problem is the abuse of women and the killing femicide of women. The probably second biggest one is the issue of land and of language and of those kind of cultural rights. And then poverty, the fact that we did not, after 30 years, give sufficient attention to the economic rights of people, the access to water, access to land, access to economic opportunities, access to work, access to an income. Okay, we can say there's a SASSA grants, etc. But I think still we haven't done enough. Or in homelessness, for instance. I still want to look at all the municipalities' housing waiting list and see who of those people are there from 1994.
Yeah.
If we haven't dealt with them, then we, in terms of human rights and in terms of the constitution that's 30 years old, we're in trouble. But again, I want to say there needs to be balance. There are significant strides that's made in the education of people, of girls, of the girl child, you know. So there's a lot still to do, but a lot has also been achieved. And and I hope the next 30 years, and there's talks about the changing the constitution, etc., but the 30 years, we'll galvanize the constitution so that the things that we promise in the constitution is rolled out. Because the frustration is not, everybody say this is a good constitution, but the frustration is that the good things that's articulated in the constitution is not coming into the lives of the people in Smarty Town, in Amstelhof, in Langvlei, in wherever they are, in Bakweni, in Langabuya. That's the thing. In the next 30 years, we must deal with it.
Yes. Now, Calvin, it's appetite for some goodbye to say, but I do want you to tell us about this song. This is going to be the last song I'm playing of yours. The Weeknd's Blinding Lights. Why did you choose this song?
I'm also in contact with the future and the present. So I can't for the whole night listen to struggle songs. Let me tell you about this artist first. Before I Artists Against Apartheid was a group of people who had conviction that they must change the system, etc. Many of them has deviated, has forgotten those roots. The Weeknd, or Abel Tesfaye, his real name,
is Ethiopian,
is a principal person. He was the first artist, when Israel dropped bombs on Gaza, to make a contribution towards the children of Gaza.
Yeah.
And a couple of other artists, Dua Lipa, some of the other
Gracie
artists.
Abrams.
They joined him, but most of them are not. So then the issue of the Grammys. Every year he's making hits, but he's never winning at the Grammys.
He's never,
till the point that they make a position that he will never submit. submit work to the Grammys for judgment because they are a racist, imperialist, they are a biased organization. And that's why I like him, because his principle, like we were 50 years ago. 50 years
yeah,
ago.
I see now what you mean. But yeah, that is your Calvin. It was a lerende experience. Is that a word?
Ja,
a lerende experience for my. Want, I mean, sien het die, jy sien hom elke dag, jy worry, al die stories, jy soos, ek sal nie vir my ouers die vraag gaan vra nie, because
ek, yeah, no, that's the issue, ne?
That is where.
Many parents don't talk about the past because it might be difficult, or they were not completely in the struggle, etc. And they don't want to talk with the kids. But I think we need to lend out parents, borrow parents, so that if I can talk to somebody and others talk to my kids. You see, across things.
The problem is
there's no platforms for this anymore. People are on their phones, social media, in front of the TV. There's no more around the fire, in the, you know, around the Draadloos. That's the problem.
The community is being destroyed now.
by social media, where people try to befriend you, but you meet them in the mall and they don't greet you. But they wonder what's up, what is the friend? Facebook friend, but they don't greet you when they see you no more.
Ay, nee, maar dit is as my woord gaan. Ek wat self social media vir Casey doen, see it every day.
Yeah.
Everyone's on their phone. My ma sê, ons stel nie belang aan wat hulle sê nie. That's not true. Ek hou net van vra nie.
Yeah,
as ook as gevolg van social, because we see everything these days online. Maar ja, laat ons nou by die einde van die punt kom. Calvin, het was baie wonderlik om vir jou saam met my te hopelik sien ek vir jou by die Castle of Good Hope. Ek het saam met die bestuurders moet gesels om vir my te vat, man.
Yeah,
ek geloof is hele paar jong mense.
Ja, dat hulle kan kom, dat hulle koppe kan opmaak.
Yes, en meer kan leer oor wat daai tyd gebeur het. Mense, dis Calvin Gilfell, nie so van naand saam met my op Onse Mense.